You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everybody. This is Serena, Lady of the Woods, and apparently I am going to be filling in for Lance White, who is unavailable tonight. And we have a very special guest, and her name is Eve Lorgan. Eve Lorgan is a dedicated counseling professional, UFO alien abduction researcher, yogi, and writer. She began her pioneering work with alien abductees while earning her master's degree in counseling psychology in 1992. She also holds a BS in biochemistry and worked in the biotechnology industry for 7 years. Eve started a support group in 1994 in San Diego County, California, for experiencers of anomalous trauma and continues to consult with anomalous trauma clients worldwide today while living in Western North Carolina. She was a close associate of the late Barbara Basolic and is dedicated in continuing and expanding the work of the late Dr. Carla Turner. Well, hello, Eve, and I'm just going to bring you in and say hello and thank you and welcome to the Fireside Chat.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm sorry that Lance couldn't join us, but I'm happy to be here.
I am happy you're here, too, and I hope to hear from Lance really soon. So, anyway, this is not my forte here. I'm usually the little side voice on the side, and I know you do have a lot to say, and we did discuss a couple of things that we wanted to touch upon. Yes. And I would really love for you to just take the floor and just talk about those things that you feel are important, maybe some things you haven't mentioned before. And I have a couple of little notes that I have here, and one of them is you mentioned telegony, this word telegony.
Yes.
And I found it fascinating that I have seen this word mentioned by somebody else outside of the Ringing Cedars books. And that you understood what it was. So if at some point you could discuss that too, that would be great. But why don't you just go ahead and tell us what you would like to say?
Yeah, I mean, we could even start off with that topic.
Okay.
And why I believe it was related. Actually, I did a blog post on junk DNA and, I guess, maternal inheritance factors that were believed to be non-nuclear genetic related. You can understand what that means. And I think it's related actually to the bonding phenomena that takes place in what I call the alien orchestrated human bonding dramas, or what I call the alien love bite scenario. And this also happens with people who've had the military abduction experience along with alien abductions. That might get a little bit complex, but in my first book, The Love Bite, which was published in the year 2000, that was basically my first introduction to a hypothesis, which I put together along with a lot of correspondence with with Barbara Bartholik. And I was actually didn't meet her until after Dr. Carla Turner's death in 1996. But I was very interested in Dr. Carla Turner's work because she introduced elements that I was also seeing with reports in the people in my support group and privately that revolved around the alien and the military collusion and the what I call the MILAB experience, and also a lot of the deceptions which take place with some alien beings who are working or abducting certain people and are masquerading as beings of light. And, of course, a perfect example of one of Carla Turner's cases was the Ted Rice case in the book called Masquerade of Angels. And that was a very good case, which I actually shortened Ted Rice's case and then put it in the Love Bite book. And then what I did is I just focused and specialized more on the what I call the alien love bite scenario, where the aliens will actually bond you with another individual early in life, sometimes several times, And then when you meet the person later in life, it sets off a very powerful connection. You know, lots of chemistry, deja vus, synchronicities, an amazing connection with another individual. And of course, for most people who've had the alien abduction experience, I would say most of them don't necessarily recall what happens in their experiences with respect to how they're being maybe pre-bonded to someone else that they meet later in life. But of course, in Ted's case, it was a demonstration of, you know, what he was able to remember through several hypnotic regressions that Barbara Bartholik was the one who did. And she did an excellent job in uncovering not just that, but many more elements to his experience. So to get back to kind of the bonding issue, in The Love Bite, when I worked with people and got their stories of how they think that their alien, quote, handlers were setting them up with, let's say, another lover or a targeted partner, and I proposed some reasons on why I thought that the aliens were doing this. And of course, that time, you know, the basic definition and understanding of alien abductions and alien encounters is mostly revolves around the alien hybrid breeding program and the, you know, the breeding aspect of a genetic product of two individuals being, you know, breeded together kind of situation. And that certainly is one aspect and one viable reason why they could be doing that with two people, whether or not they're married to them. It didn't really matter. In many of the cases, they weren't necessarily married to the partner that they were bonded with, or they didn't necessarily have children. But again, then, you know, in alien abductions, sometimes they can take you, you know, take a sperm sample from the male, for example, and then go and use that sperm sample to impregnate another woman that they're not even aware of. So you don't necessarily have to be, you know, married to someone who's basically the recipient of your sperm. So the same goes for women. I mean, they could be used in many capacities. But so one of the reasons I believed was due to breeding, and that's a simplistic reason. And the other reasons was emotional harvesting based on the observation of the high drama and the energy produced in these connections that were created, where there was a very powerful connection and what I believe an imprinting kind of thing going on based on the energy. Maybe I could talk a little bit about the what I believe is the imprinting aspect, because that ties into the telegony. And that's
telegony,
a word that I think has been in the literature since the 1800s. And it's known about in ancient times before they really knew about genetics. And it has to do with what people genetically inherit or believe to inherit based on a woman's very first love partner or very first love connection, where she had an imprint of that particular male that she had sex with, or even necessarily didn't even have to have sex with, actually, because it was an imprinting that was taking place based on a really, really powerful connection. And the idea behind telegony is that you can actually inherit characteristics due to imprinting that are not necessarily due to the genetics, or imprinting can be responsible for what the woman's children inherited, even if the partner she had a child with was not the same father as the original one that she had, quote, a love affair with and was strongly imprinted with. So the idea
is
that
this is the power of the woman's love,
a woman is strongly imprinted with a very, very powerful connection that in and of itself could cause their children to inherit certain characteristics due to that imprinting. So that was one of the reasons why I think that aliens, they cannot necessarily, I'm beginning to think they can't necessarily manipulate the DNA as much as, I can't hear you. No, I got a message here. Sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I'm just going to testing. I don't want to keep going forward unless I can hear you. Okay, good. So if I can continue, unless you had a question and you wanted to pause a little bit and get a little more background. I cannot hear you. I see the message in the text box. So I don't know what's happening here. If I could continue, I could use my headphones. Maybe that will help. Technical difficulties. I'm so sorry. That does happen sometimes. I'm going to put my headphones in. Maybe that will help. Well, the telegony, if we could continue talking, I mean, I can go ahead and go on about that.
Yeah.
I learned this actually from the Ringing Cedars series, which is a series of books written by a Russian author. And they seem to think that it was very viable thing. Yeah, Vladimir Miegre. And it was based on a shaman woman named Anastasia, who told Vladimir Miegre, who, I guess she learned a lot of things in her tradition, which was not, it was a very isolated community of very highly evolved people spiritually and shamanically. So she learned a lot of things in her lineage about what's really happening in terms of what's inherited and how, I guess, a woman, when she's imprinted with her first lover, or maybe a very powerful connection, that those characteristics of the first lover or the one who imprinted her can manifest in her children later. So I think that that could be maybe a mitochondrial DNA issue, or it could be the what I call the tantric love connection, which creates some kind of change in imprinting in our own DNA somehow. So I think there's more than just the biochemical nuclear DNA factors of genetic inheritance, and that the aliens in particular take advantage of what they know, that maybe what we don't know in terms of what qualities they're trying to imbue in their hybrid progeny. So because they cannot necessarily manipulate the genetic, the nuclear DNA as much as maybe we think they can. So that was the basis of that particular blog post. And it was a later addition to one of the reasons why I think they are doing the bonding with some women in the alien love bite situations. They're looking for really strong bonding and what's responsible for that. In fact, one of the cases in my love bite book, it's the case of Mia and Jordan. And Mia Adams actually was a woman who wrote her own book based on her alien encounters and her whole the drama that played out with a man she met later in life who was a love bite kind of connection. And it turned out that he was actually her mitochondrial son. And that's why they had such a strong connection. And you're going to have to read about it in a book. I don't have time to really go into details. But the gist of it was that they discovered through Jordan's connection, his connection with the FBI and people who knew about the aliens that were involved in her case, that the aliens were actually studying what they call non-tangible energy fields of bonding. So that there's something to do with bonding that could be a mitochondrial reason, because they had such a strong connection. And he was basically a product of in vitro fertilization of an alien and human military project back in, well, gosh, she was only 17 when she was taken. It was able to trace this back through memories of hypnotic regressions of abductions that occurred actually by human military at that time. But they were working in conjunction with aliens and alien technology. And they took one of her ovums in one of these abduction experiences. And then in the ovum is like a single egg, single-celled egg, and they take out the nuclear DNA in the nucleus and remove that DNA, and then they insert the DNA of two other parents back into the ovum, and then it's a conception product, and it grows into a zygote and an embryo and a fetus, right? And so it was implanted into another woman whose nuclear DNA was used. But see, it also had the mitochondrial DNA from the egg, which was donated by Mia, who was the abductee. And she was actually believed to be a hybrid, alien-human hybrid, according to Jordan, who had contacts in the FBI and the secret government, who were basically following alien abductees and observing them because they must have known that they were like hybrids or something. Which, of course, is a whole can of worms right there that there's obviously people being watched and followed around, and they know who all these abductees. So that's really interesting. I can hear a little bit of sound now, and if you want me to continue, I will.
Can you hear me now?
Now I can hear you. So I don't know if what I said was able to be heard over the air. So
yeah, I think so. I tested it, and I could hear you over the air.
Okay, good, good.
Okay, yeah. Good. Well, thank you for that. And I'm sorry for the complication. I don't know what's happening.
Well,
but this is
to be expected.
But
I'm kind of glad you asked that question because I was a biochemist actually before I became a master's in counseling psychology. And I have an interest in, you know, DNA hybridization and what could be happening on all those different levels. And I, you know, Mia Adams, at the time that she came to me, she had already written her book, which was a biography of her experience about meeting this man named Jordan, who was, I think, she was like in her early 50s and he was maybe 30 in his early 30s. But it turns out that he was actually old enough to have been her son at the time that she was abducted, where her egg was taken and then implanted into another woman. So he actually was her, quote, mitochondrial son. And they did have a strong connection. And I don't think they really consummated it because there was a lot of this strange disruption going on, which is like a classic alien love bite scenario, how it played out with all the surveillance and spooky stuff and, you know, high drama and smoke and mirrors. And it's actually quite a good case. Why do they do this, Eve?
In your opinion and from your experience, why do they match up certain people with certain people? And why is there all this cloak and daggers, mirrors and smoke and spooky stuff?
In her case, there was more of a cloak and dagger, I believe, because the military was involved. And it was, a classic MyLab case. But she definitely was an alien abductee who had several encounters and visitations throughout her life, as well as military involvement. Maybe that happened later. Well, obviously it happened when she was 17 because they took her then. So even at that time, they knew who these abductees were and were suspected to have been alien-human hybrids with altered DNA, because that's what, she found out later, and that, there must be a supposition in certain secret government military groups that they know who these abductees are and they suspect that they are genetically altered, which is interesting, maybe because they have different characteristics that they're looking for. And I don't know exactly what that is, but we suspect that there are people who are different. I mean, working with abductees over all these years, we do come to find that there are some commonalities which we think are a little bit different and unique than the regular population.
Yeah.
And that's high psychic ability.
Let me ask you another question.
Say that again?
In your opinion.
Your sound was cut off, so you're going to have to put it in the chat window.
Oh, no. Okay. You still can't hear me? Okay. I'll put it in chat.
Yeah. It's interesting. Maybe your mute button's on.
No, I'm on phone.
If you want me to continue, just type it in the chat window. I don't want to leave a gap here. Why do some people get abducted and others do not? Good question. By aliens? Sometimes they're opportunistic, depending on the alien encounter. Sometimes you would think they're opportunistic, but more often than not, the people have we say they're from a bloodline, and they must be looking for something in that bloodline that might be a genetic line or a genetic trait, but they tend to be taken in certain families and certain bloodlines that more often than not. Or in MILAD cases, there's people who seem to be taken because their parents or someone in their family line was involved with occult secret societies where there was a pact made, like high-level Illuminati, Freemasons, or something like that. And then they end up in these secret projects as if that was one of the qualifying factors that allowed them to be taken. There was some kind of pact, and maybe it's a spiritual pact. Anyway, there are people who are taken, I think, because they might be good for their hybrid breeding program. That might be one reason why they take them. But there may be other reasons why they use them, depending on their particular agenda. It's not all about the hybrid breeding program. And we know that even from the MILABs. I mean, the MILABs, they use them as Manchurian candidates.
Right.
Oh, yes. Oh, in my book, in the Dark Side of Cupid book, which is really an extension of what I learned from the love bite and the alien bonding scenarios, in the Dark Side of Cupid, I noticed that there was a pattern emerging of what the reports that I was getting as a counselor, what I call the love bite kind of relationship where someone feels like their relationship's being interfered with paranormally. There's a paranormal interference. It feels like it's being orchestrated. There's something that's about it that's really strange. They have super powerful psychic connections with their partner, but unusual things happen surrounding the relationship, high dramas, or they can't consummate it, or they feel like they're being buffeted around on a roller coaster, or what I call if someone's partner is overshadowed by what I call a third-party entity, where another entity is observed by either both people or one person, and the entity could be overshadowing one person and then acting as a psychic vampire. In other words, the entity is actually using the person as a portal to use them as an energy vampire. So in those cases where, let's say, one of the persons is literally possessed or partially possessed, like one of these, I've had a lot of reports from, let's say, women and men who are like higher consciousness people. They think outside the box. They're interested in raising their consciousness, learning about spirituality. They may be in the alternative media. They may be whistleblowers. They may be on a truth quest or a healing and recovery strategy. And then they're targeted by one of these psychopath types. And,
right.
Can you repeat that question?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can hear you. So if you could
repeat
that question.
God, I seem to be coming in and out. Yeah.
So if I could see it, then you could repeat the question. One was, why do they target people with higher consciousness? And that was what I call the disruption scenario of some people who are at that level of really becoming aware, or they're vocal in the alternative media, or they're breaking programming because they're already, let's say, a MILAB or in a mind-controlled project or from one of these bloodlines, or they're just an abductee who's just an abductee. And then a lot of times they get targeted by these hosted psychopath partners who act as psychic vampires, and it just seems to happen a lot more to MILABs, but it could happen to people who don't even have anything to do with the phenomena. And I've had reports of people who are just like wonderful people, you know? So, I can hear you, so that's good.
Okay, good. I wanted to ask, in your work that you've been doing this for so many years, I personally have not had any, as far as I know, any experience
with aliens.
Okay,
here it goes again. It's blipped out, so you're going to have to type in the question.
I blipped out. Oh, this is great.
I don't understand why that's happening, but...
Okay.
Yeah, there's so much to both my books. It's hard to condense it all, but I'll do my best.
Okay.
Oh,
I put it in chat.
The percentage of people being abducted, I would believe, boy, it's probably a lot larger than what we think. And the only number that we really have is what the Roper poll did way back in the early 90s or the mid-90s. And I think it was the Bigelow Foundation that funded this study. And, you know, anomalous experiences like near-death experiences. And anyway, they thought that it was around 2% of the population who've had unusual experiences that would mimic a lot of the reports that people have with their alien visitations. So they're saying around 2%, but I think it's more than that personally, because most people aren't aware. And the trouble is, you know, aliens are really good at wiping out your memories. So only the people who are at the tip of the iceberg are the ones really remembering. And then if you do more and more memory retrieval methods and you work on like what I call the healing, recovery, and awakening process over a number of years, you may come to remember much, much more than you ever thought. So a lot of times, you know, one or two events you remember, and that's the tip of the iceberg. You may be taking a lot more than that. So I think more people are taken than even realize it. And I guess it's a scary thing people to consider. Nobody wants to think they're being abducted or visited by aliens.
Yeah, I agree.
But
can you hear
me? Yeah. So
okay.
I would
so
say
I'm
that
going
the,
in
the
and
dark
out,
side
apparently.
Of Cupid relationship doesn't necessarily only happen to people who've had alien abductions or MILABs. So it's a little bit different than the alien love bite, but may have somewhat the same signature in terms of the wildness and the synchronicities and the paranormal interference. So that's why I distinguished it from the first book and didn't really focus on the alien abduction angle as much. Although I do have some pretty good cases in there that were actually donated by Barbara Bartholik.
is it interference due to human evolvement or involvement?
Evolvement.
As if, I'm not sure. Evolvement. Okay, so people who, that's a good question. Are they taking people who have higher consciousness or who are evolving, and maybe they are, doing something to the genetics to check us every few hundred years to see if something takes, and you can call that evolution. I don't know. I mean, whatever they're doing, I don't know if it's evolving us or not. So, but the higher consciousness people are oftentimes targeted.
Right.
Or just through living your own kind. Can you repeat? It goes away too fast for me to see what the whole question was. If you could type it permanently in this text box, it helps me see.
It's in the text.
Can you
hear me?
Question, please.
Can you hear me?
We're talking about if people are more evolved, that's why they take us. I don't know about that. But a lot of, okay. Or just living through their own kind, their own people. Well, they take their own kind, obviously. They take their genetic downline. But I think with some of the targeted partners, like in the Love Bite book, like the abductee reported that the person that she was set up with, he wasn't an abductee. He wasn't of a special, quote, bloodline. They just wanted to use him for a particular purpose, which was to maybe activate her kundalini or activate her energy so that she was more psychic. And then they would use her on different remote viewing ops and black ops and MILAB projects. So let's say the targeted partner is not necessarily another abductee of a particular genetic trait, because they don't necessarily take you for the hybridization process. Most of the time, the people don't have children, or they might be even past reproductive age. So that's why I think the whole hybrid breeding program is not the all-in-all of the alien abduction agenda. And that's one of the things what I showed in my book. If I talk about the soul and immortality, I believe, these messages that you're typing in, they go away too fast for me to read the whole thing. So immortality, we talk about the human soul. I believe that actually they are feeding on that energy. Yes, they do not have a type of immortality that they live through us in order to attain a kind of immortality. And this is based on what I've learned from Dr. Corrado Malanga's research. He's a researcher from Italy. He's also a PhD organic chemist. He's worked with alien abduction research in excess of 25 years. And one of the things that we both agreed on, with the alien interference and then feeding on our soul energy, sometimes that's manifested through our sexual energy, the kundalini, the prana, but essentially, we have our soul, and we have our mind, and we have our spirit. Okay, I'm going to keep talking here. Okay, so this is kind of complex, and one would have to read some of my articles on the research of Dr. Corrado Malanga and alien hierarchies and the levels of alien interference. Most researchers, they only look at the first level of interference, which is like the physical abductions and the medical evaluations or the things that happen within a medical construct, whereas there are many deeper levels of alien interference in the abductees' lives. Of course, one of which is attaining the energy of the person. And this is kind of hard to explain in a short period of time, but yes, I believe that they are using our soul energy and implanting their own, what I call their mind memories and a spirit component of themselves within us as a parasite in order to live through us. So it's a way of them attaining a type of immortality through us, because they cannot do that because they lack a certain soul component. According to Malanga, we have mind, spirit, and soul. It's like a triad of aspects of beings, which is really integrated in like most, quote, normal people. But the aliens lack the soul aspect of being, which is the part of us that can live beyond time and space and be immortal. and be in the past, present, future all at the same time. So they live through us like kind of like a virus would live through us in order to live forever and reproduce through us by inserting their mind and spirit component inside of us like a parasite.
Wow. Or
almost like an attached entity, but it's a little bit different actually than an attached entity. So that's
this is like
something
the Gua'ul
that Malanga goes into great detail with, and that's on one of my articles on my website at evelorgan.com. You'd probably have to do a search in it, like the Gua'ul. Yes, in fact, I don't know if many are familiar with the Stargate SG-1 series that used to be on TV. I don't know if it's still playing as reruns, but in Stargate SG-1, they have these entities called the Gua'ul. And they actually only manifest through people by putting this symbiote kind of snaky thing in their spine. And then once they do that, the person becomes a host for the Gua'ul, and the Gua'ul live through them, and they like partially or fully possess them, and their eyes like turn like white when the Gua'ul part takes over, and they start, you know, doing their agenda through the people. So it's similar. Is it related to the Kundalini? Actually, the Kundalini energy is very important to certain of the alien parasites. There's a certain type of what we call the incorporeal alien parasites are really the power behind the corporeal aliens, which are taking many different forms. So there's, I think, two or three main incorporeal beings, which are really nothing more than a black dot or a shadow that kind of is really from like another universe. And they attach on the base of the spine or on the sacral tailbone. And when they do that, they could activate the Kundalini and then siphon off energy through these attachment kind of things that they put on different parts of the energy body or the brain, depending on if it's physical or energetic. So one of the energetic ones is they put it on the tailbone, and they could affect the Kundalini energy and suck off that energy, feed off of it. So in Malanga's work, he talks about, you know, the Orus Ra entity, which is will take a chicken-like hawk form. Sometimes it takes a snake form. And then what's really behind it, let me finish that. What's really behind that entity is a shadow-type being that exists from another universe and uses many forms in order to interact with us here in this dimensional reality. So they have to feed off of us, and they use these etheric implants on certain parts of our body, especially the tailbone. And there's another being called the Lux being, which is a type of light being, but like a ball of white light. And it'll be like in the heart area. It'll like jump around and move around. Sometimes it's on the solar plexus. And then there's different implant locations that we find when we're doing our liberation techniques and the hypnotic regressions. There's different locations. But I'm gonna skip ahead to a question you had about if this is more common in women in terms of why they would want to activate the Kundalini energy of the women. And I would say yes. I discovered this through working with female abductees who are Milabs in particular, although it could happen to really any abductee, I guess. But there was a situation that was going on that made us think that, wait a minute, what was happening, in a love bite case, in my book, for example, I think her name was Angelina, she was someone who was having reptilian abductions, as well as alien greys, as well as military. And what would happen is that she would have repetitive reptilian sexual encounters, where the reptilian would literally manifest right in her bedroom, as if it was there physically. And it would be kind of invisible, but it was like she could feel it physically. She would describe it like, you know, she'd be in the bed with her husband, right? And then the entity would enter the room through some kind of portal, and she could see it in her third eye, but because she was clairvoyant anyway. But the entity would like sit down on the bed, and there would be like a depression on the bed, like there was a real weight on the bed. And then he would be like playing around with her hair, and he'd be like pulling it up, and her hair would be like flying up and falling down, and the entity would like pull off her husband's hand from her body, like he'd be laying with his arm over his wife, and then the reptilian would literally pick up his hand and throw it off of her because he was really possessive. And then the reptilian would proceed to have sex. And I know that this is sounds like it's a horror story, but, you know, the reptilians can have a particular ability to really arouse the woman's sexuality and the kundalini to an unnatural degree. It can cause kundalini rising, okay? So they use these women as what I call scarlet women in a, quote, Aleister Crowley kind of way, it seems like. And they activate the kundalini through the reptilian sexual liaison. And then once that happens, let's say the reptilian leaves, goes back through the portal, and then within minutes, the military show up. And then when the military take her, then they go and use her on, yes, they go and use her on remote viewing ops because her psychic ability is just amplified because she just had a kundalini arousal from the reptilian sexual encounter. So the women in particular have more of that sensitivity than men in general. And so they use women as what I call the scarlet women. I think that they could use them for power and magical manifestations and occult rituals as well, depending on the person. And I've had other cases, but they were not cases that I was allowed to talk about. But there were some who were of a particular bloodline, let's say, that was what I call the Starfire bloodline. And the Starfire bloodline are basically used as scarlet women for not only the occultic black magicians who are humans, but the entities that work behind and through them who have, let's say, who take on the masquerade of being certain really good-looking Nordic types, at least in this particular case. And I think that it's happening more than people realize, that there's these ETs that are, you know, masquerading as these wonderful Nordic beings, and what they're really doing is they're feeding off these women's kundalini energy. But there's something about a certain kind of woman of a certain bloodline that can produce the starfire menstrual blood and the power that's in that they can get certain powers off certain people. So there are certain genetic strains that, I guess, result in greater power for these occult prana operations. So that's kind of unfortunate. But what I really found interesting, and I talked about this with George Kavassalis, because it was something that had come up based on a similarity of Malanga's work when he talked about the Lux being, which I mentioned earlier. It's an incorporeal entity that is like a parasite. It doesn't have a body, and it's from, quote, this universe, but they will parasite abductees, and this Lux ball can move around in the body. And one of the people that I work with, there was like a Lux ball moving up and down the spine of her, and then that ball of energy was later taken by one of these good-looking Nordic type of beings or another alien who came and took her, and then he would take that ball, like the ball had, you know, somehow got the energy from her kundalini, and then it was used to transfer the energy from her to the alien. So they would take this ball several times, like several times throughout her life. So
wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's like an energy extraction operation that's happening on this semi-etheric interdimensional level. So we only find out about those things later when, you know, we start comparing stories and from Dr. Malanga's work, which is really a commendable work that really needs to get out there in a bigger way. And it's because he's Italian, so not a lot of the work is in English, but he does have an English website that talks about the liberation methods, which is really important. But he also talks about the clones and the what he calls the alien life cycle of what really happens in an abductee's life in terms of, you know, when the aliens come when you're born and then they do this particular process. Yeah, and that's something you can read about on Malanga's website. Of course, my purpose is, you know, what are the solutions? And this is something that Malanga really wanted to spend more time on. I mean, we could research up the gazoo about what the problem is and all these little weird things that happen with the aliens. But in reality, you know, when you realize that they're taking energy, they're bonding people, they're basically taking your soul out of your body and sticking it in the clone body and doing all these weird things, that it's about, you know, the soul. The soul is the most important thing of the humans. And yeah, exactly. It is a bit nefarious. So what Malanga did was basically create neurolinguistic, semi-hypnotic methods of liberation where the person was able to do a guided visualization. This is what I do also. There's three different methods. There's a Simbad, FMS, and a color test. And basically we connect first with our soul component. And there's three aspects of our being that we connect with and identify and get clear about. And that's our mind, our spirit, and our soul. And of course, our body. But in abductees, what he had found was that there was a kind of miscommunication and incoherence between this triad aspect of being that should be connected in, let's say, people who haven't gone through trauma, or people, let's say people with higher consciousness and they're really integrated and they have expanded awareness. They will have an integrated mind, spirit, soul, and body. So they have a real clear connection of, let's say, their higher self and different aspects of their being. But with alien abductees who have gone through trauma, aliens will not only deliberately do a type of trauma, but they will somehow parasite themselves and use implants, both physically and energetically, to block certain energy and consciousness pathways so that it disconnects the mind from the spirit, from the soul, so that there's a bit of a disconnect, so they can go ahead and hijack the energy of the soul and then basically implement their will and their mind and their spirit in that person and use them as a puppet. So this is something that's really kind of hard to accept, because many abductees are like, you know, I have my own will. I don't think this is happening at all.
Right.
You know, but in when you read The Dark Side of Cupid, my second book, I see clearly there's certain cases where we call it the hosted possessed character, and it could be hosted by what's observed as a snake-like being, a lizard-type being, a reptilian being, but it could be another interdimensional type of entity like a troll spirit. One person recognized the spirit that was hosting her lover as the Mephistopheles, the one of the Faustian bargain occult literature, and there could be other images. So I'm not saying that it's all ET, but there's other interdimensional entities that could possess or partially possess someone and then use that person as a conduit to basically vampirize their soul and their sexual energy. And then there's a way to identify this, to see what the signature is and the red flag, so you can identify what kind of being is operating. And so that's why I wrote the book, because, you know, if someone wanted to ask, are they good ETs? Are they bad ETs? Oh, how do I know? You really don't know unless, I'll talk about psychic attacks. You really don't know until you look at the behaviors and the intentions of the beings that are working, and you just have to observe it over time. And because you don't really want to basically make it all black and white and say all entities are like this or all these kind of entities are like that, like all of a certain race. You have to really identify what are their behaviors, what's their intentions, what's their capabilities, and what are the red flags, and are they feeding on your energy? So anyway, and one of the things that these entities do is psychically attack, and they do cause pains and headaches and different things. And I mean, this is one of the things that was noticed with the, let's say, the really bad love bites, where somebody had a partner that was like they're possessed by something, or they're overshadowed by another kind of entity. And that entity may take different forms based on that person's perception. Many of the times they don't really see it. They just feel it. But one of the things that they do feel, and this is really weird, is let's say after you meet this person, or maybe even before this like possessed love bite partner, that the entity that's working behind the partner can go and attack that person, so that they continually can feed and do things and, you know, just play games. So that happens. I know you had asked about psychic attack and which will cause pains and headaches and foggy mind. And yeah, that can happen. I mean, psychic attacks in and of themselves can cause many manifestations, like, you know, suddenly feeling their energy. When you have one of these, you know, beings linked into you, you could definitely feel it. If you're a sensitive, even if you're not a sensitive, you're going to feel it. That's my opinion, is that this is something that's out of the ordinary, and that when you have it, you're going to know it. And I've had reports from people who said, you know what, I've had this, I've never had it before in my life, and I'm telling you, this is exactly like what you're saying, and I would have never believed it. And yes, you know it when you have it. So,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
Can you hear me yet?
Yeah, I can hear you, and I can see some of your messages. So it's off and on, which is kind of weird. Yeah.
What is going on?
Yeah, maybe they don't want us talking about this fun stuff here.
I really did have some more questions for you because this is amazing, but I can't. If you can't hear me, it's just frustrating.
Yeah, it's just what I need to do is switch to. Yeah, when you type in the chat, can you still hear me?
Yes.
Okay. It's just that it disappears really fast, so maybe I'm on the wrong box. So I just want to be able to see it if you type it in. Okay. So you asked about psychic attacks and something about what causes pains and headaches, and there's something new that I'm observing too.
The ones that cause the pain, right? Why do they do that? What are they doing? What kind of beings are they that cause these pains and foggy mind and just basically try to make you incapacitated?
Well, they can do that through linking in psychically. And it's actually what I'm starting to notice is that I'm getting cases of what I call partial possession attacks or entity attacks, and they're not really sure what kinds of entities they are, but they have a certain signature, and they'll make them have headaches or pain or feel foggy or not be able to think right, be seeing differently, have spontaneous body movements, and it's like a partial possession kind of situation, and that could cause pain, that could cause all kinds of unusual symptoms. So it's like when they start to try to link in, there may be different manifestations and symptoms. But what's interesting is I had read several books and was studying the possession and exorcism phenomena, especially the work of M. Scott Peck and Malachi Martin. I know we only have a few minutes left, so I'll probably just have to wrap it up. But there was a lot of similarities with what was observed with Malachi Martin's basically looking at the stages and progression of possession and how entities will try to move in and invade and the different things that can happen to your body. And I also read about this in Robert Bruce's book, Psychic Defense. It's a really good book. Yeah. And so I don't know if I'll have enough time to talk all about that, but that was really helpful for me to understand. There's different manifestations of the different level of involvement and invasion of these kinds of entities. So most of the time you can clear them with intentions and with clearing and cutting the psychic cords and, you know, cleaning up your life, closing those windows of attack. And I talk about that in my book. Like a whole third of the book is about the healing, how to resolve it, how to be proactive, what kind of paranormal intervention strategies to use so that if you think something like this is happening, you could talk about it with your partner, you can communicate and then do certain exercises to do some clearings or cutting the links. So
yeah. Okay.
I wanted to make it solution oriented. So yeah, I can hear you. So is there any last comments? I don't know how much time we have left. So
yeah, we have probably three minutes now, if you can still hear me.
Okay.
Well, I did want to get into the solutions, but we didn't have time to do that. But
I
wanted to,
show.
Because we had technical difficulties, I wanted to ask if you could come back and hopefully we won't have these problems. And then I can ask you the questions that I had planned and we can talk more about the solutions.
Yeah,
because
that's
this is important
idea.
To get into that. Yeah. I would also like to know if you can just touch really quickly. I don't know how much time we have. I mean, my clock is telling me 8 minutes, but he said 4 minutes. He just came on and told me 4 minutes.
Okay.
But I wanted to ask about the conspiracy aspect of this because I feel like if this is happening on such a wide scale, then there is no such thing as conspiracy, and people keep categorizing it as such, and I don't agree with that anymore.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, there may be a conspiracy in terms of the secrecy as to the true nature of what is really happening, and I think the extraterrestrial hypothesis theory is somewhat of a smokescreen in terms of what's really happening to us on a soul level and an energetic level, because a lot of what's happening looks like classic possession. And I have to admit that because I know that that's happening and that has happened to several cases, although it's both. You know, you do see the ET, the UFO kind of thing and the classic abduction things, and then you also see more of the manifestations of the possessions and the psychic attacks and the overshadowed entities. So I see it all, but my clincher is psychic vampirism and soul vampirism is the red flag that tells you what they're really doing and why. And that's how you can tell, are they benevolent or are they malevolent? Well, if they're malevolent, they're going to steal your life force energy and try to hijack your soul. And if they're if they're good, they're not going to do that. So,
right.
You know.
They're not going to do, they're not going to interfere. They're not going to make you miserable. They're not going to hurt you. They're not going to do any of that. But I feel like more people are having.
It looks like the sound did another number on you. So, I just probably should just give you my website again, evelorgan.com, and both my books are available on Amazon, so you can always look them up, and you could always email me if you have any questions, and I do sessions with people also, so I'll just kind of wait until you say something, and I don't know how much more time we have, so I may have to say good evening and definitely come back to talk about solutions.